Just like that, no foreplay. Talking about sex, you just throw me straight in. No readings or preliminaries. Yeah, thank you very much. Anyway, I'm Sean. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks very much, Mark, for asking me along to do the chair here. I don't often get asked to do chairs. One of the reasons for that is that I live in the middle of nowhere and we don't really have many meetings around. And I used to go. I was going to my own home group here, like for. But we never really got going after COVID. I live in Hay on Wye, which is on the Welsh English border, on the Welsh side. I will add, like, you know, you can actually piss into England or onto England from where we are, and vice versa, like. And anyway, I'm Sean. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm here to speak about my alcoholism. I'm very pleased. I got sober many years ago, and I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous in London. And it's been a wonderful trip, really. Like, to say it's a different life, like, is there's no way, like, can I describe the difference in life? Like, it was I came from some sort of subhuman into becoming, evolving as a human being. Like, you know, I was the kind of missing link, as it were, like, not very human, like all the human facilities that one has, like, they were all kind of drained out of me through my alcoholism. And I came to AA in September the 15th, 1975, and I thought I'd get 3 days relief. And I haven't had a drink since, I'm very pleased to say. And I also like to add, I've been off my knees ever since. Alcohol had me on my knees, and the sobriety got me off my knees. What it was like, and I always think it's excellent, like the whole AA paradigm, what it was like, what's happening, and what it's like now. It's a winner. We're not all the same. We all have different routes. We all, you know, like, we were all the same, like, you know, like, I think AA, if it's anything, it's the celebration of differences, although many people won't allow you to be different. But we're all different anyway. Like, I'm not claiming any sort of a monopoly on being different to everybody else. Like, I'm different to a lot of people, and I've got my own story. And I knew when I came into AA, I accepted, I was 28 going on 90. And I accepted without a shadow of doubt, like, that I was an alcoholic. And I started drinking when I was 17. I was in Dublin. I was working as a fireman in Dublin. I'd moved up there from Wexford. And I started drinking in Donoghue's pub in Merrion Row in Dublin. Like, many of you who know Dublin would know Donoghue's. It was where the folk revival started. Like, it was the place where men had begged beers and drank gallons of Guinness. And there was me in there, like, standing at the counter, spitting with the best of them, like, and drinking, sort of learning how to drink gallons of Guinness. And right from the start, like, there was issues around it. Well, I'm not altogether surprised, because I always had an ambition to be a drunk. Like, I remember going to a Fla Ciol in Ireland when I was about 14, when I wasn't drinking. A Fla Ciol is a feast of music, and you could add it as a feast of drinking. And I thought the crack was absolutely wonderful. I thought, I'm going to have some of that, like, you know. And So anyway, there was problems with the drink from the start, like, and shortly after, I was having blackouts, and my landlady locking me out of the premises, like, and me getting in over the wall at the back, and not realizing there was glass on the wall, and getting the massive cut on my leg, that sort of thing. Like, anyway, I was 6 months after I started drinking, I was in London, and that was a rite of passage then. It was 1965, we all came to London. As I said before the meeting, the big attraction was the Beatles and French letters. People had come home, like, from England, and they'd sort of show you, like, this, pull this thing out of their pocket, like, and probably the same one they still had 50 years later unused. I would say, we'll have a bit of that. So off I trot to London anyway, like, and when I came into AA, like, I heard it said, like, that alcoholism is a progressive illness. And I wasn't too fussed about the illness. I knew whatever it was progressive. And I kind of was able to look back on my own experience with alcohol, like those 11 years of drinking. First of all, I'd never seemed to cross any thin red line into alcoholism. I was always sort of, I seemed to be across the line from the start. And second, the progressive nature of it. I was able to sort of have a quick sort of assessment of the progressive nature. When I was younger, in my sort of early 20s, like I could drink all around the clock. Like I go off drinking like for weekends. I'd go to Belgium. Like Belgium was great country. Like, you know, I fucked if I know what I did there. Like, but the pubs were open 24 hours anyway. Like, and you come back in bits. Like, well, I could do that sort of thing. But at the end of my drinking, I was getting drunk very easy, and the effects of the alcoholism were sort of getting worse and worse and worse. I lost many jobs. I was homeless. A lot of that had to do with naivety and stupidity. Losing jobs had to do with sort of going to, a couple of jobs I started drunk, and they sort of decided they didn't want that sort of employee, like, and they sacked me before I got going, like, you know. So anyway, I was in many jobs, and life was tough. Like, you know, I never wasted any money. It was all spent on alcohol. And there really was no existence at all. Like in the, there was no life apart from drinking. And all of my friends, like I lived in Earl's Court in London for many of those years. Like, and all of my friends were like myself. They were jocks, paddies, sort of the odd Geordie and various other people. They were all. Eventually, I started working in the building trade, as one does. Like, you know, like one's us Irish. Like it's in our DNA. Like shovel and pick. And borrow and get out there, like, and do your bit, like, and come on there, horse. Let's see the steam rise off you. And I quite enjoyed that kind of a life because you didn't have to wash or you didn't have to do anything really. You turn up and get subs and whatever else. All of my friends worked in the building trade, like, and they were best people I've ever worked with, really. Later on, when I became middle class, if you can believe it, I look at the people I've worked with. The fuckers like to stab you in the back, like, you know, as they're telling you what a wonderful person you are. But the builders, like, I love the builders and the people, and many of my friends are today are builders. So what happened to me anyway? Like, I kind of a. I got ill. I was having convulsions from withdrawals from drink, and I remember I was carried off to building sites in ambulances, and one of them wouldn't let me back in until I got a doctor's certificate to say I was fit and healthy enough. The last thing they want is dead bodies on their building sites. Like, it costs too much money, and they have health and safety to come in. Anyway, that was the period. Then I came to a, and they, as I say, I'd known about Alcoholics Anonymous. A friend of mine had joined Alcoholics Anonymous. Pat might have remembered Nicky Fleming, Pat, Nicky Little Cork, Nicky. Nicky was a lovely man, like, but I drank with Nicky back in the day, and Nicky, I met him in a club somewhere in London. It was a She Bean in London. Like, that's the sort of places you end up when you're 18 and 19, She Beans. And this place, like, the only thing I remembered about it had two tellies in there. One was sound and one was the picture. Yeah. But Nicky, anyway, I'd met Nicky. I used to meet Nicky around, like, and he told me he joined Alcoholics Anonymous. So I always associated Alcoholics Anonymous with Nicky. Like, if I had met some of those vampots you meet, like, going around, sort of so spiritual gurus you meet, if that had been my association with AA, it would never have attracted me. But Nicky was the man, anyway, who I associated with, and a lovely man. And so I came into AA, anyway, as I say, like, hoping that it would give me 3 days' relief. And I sat there at my first meeting, and it was about a dozen. It was in Tallgarth Road in West Kensington, London, and they all shared. I remember there was a friend of mine there at the meeting when I went in. I thought, oh Jesus, how embarrassing! And anyway, then it occurred to me, well, he's here for the same as myself. And he said, "There's your chair, Sean. We've been holding that one for you." So I thought that was a nice welcome. And they all shared they shared whatever it was, these dozen people, like, and they were very ordinary people. And they were talking about alcoholism, their experience, and how now they weren't drinking. And there's no way could I deny that. Like, you know, I was very much a doubting Thomas on everything, like. And I thought, well, if they're all not drinking, like, there's a solution here, and they're all not drinking by coming here. And I thought, well, I've got one thing going for me, or two things going for me. I'm young and I'm Irish. And I'm not quite sure how I thought being Irish was going to be of any great benefit. Of course, it wasn't a great benefit back then. We've all become the flavor of the day since 1975. Like before 1975, as many of you will know, we were all paddies, no dogs, no Irish, no blacks, sort of thing. I that meeting, the word, very important this bit is, the word God was mentioned at the meeting, and I thought, oh, fuck. Now, it wasn't that I was a disbeliever, a non-believer, an atheist, an agnostic, or a failed Catholic or anything. It was just that I thought, I've got to jump through another hoop here. And this all was amazing. I never quite knew what this God business was all about, and I thought, well, I could fail on that. I know I want to stop drinking, but I'm not quite sure about this other thing. I'd love to know what it is like. So as I could actually learn how to do it. Anyway, the relief was that the word God and fuck were mentioned in the same sentence. And I thought that was a savior for me. That was absolutely brilliant. So anyway, I left that meeting that night. I left that meeting. I was a free man. I was a free man. I felt absolutely amazed at that. And I went home and I didn't sleep for 3 nights with excitement. Normally, I couldn't sleep for 3 nights with dementia. I was demented, I could pick up drops falling off a roof 3 blocks away, when I wasn't unconscious with drink. And I was awake for 3 nights. I had to get up early in the morning. I lived in what you call a pit. We used to call them pits. I'm sure some of you have lived in pits. I had to go and see the consultant at the doctor about my epilepsy. And I remember I hadn't washed. I had hydrophobia. I was terrified of getting into the bath, in case I had the convulsion in the bath. And I hadn't washed for quite a while. But my intention was to get up early anyway and go and see this consultant. And I went to sleep when I should have been getting up. So I went off to see this consultant, a very smelly man. Anyway, he informed me that I wasn't an epileptic. They'd done the test, and I wasn't epileptic. So I said to him, well, perhaps it might be the drink. He said that could be it. And I hadn't mentioned anything about drink or anybody ever asked me about drink. I always say I had a few pints. Anyway, so that was it. So that was it. So that was my sober. So what have I done then to stay sober? I'm grateful to a not sort of a secular a or Celtic Football Club A or whatever. I'm just grateful to A, all the people who were at my first meeting, the people who still go on, some of them, I wouldn't have drunk with, I can assure you, and likewise they wouldn't have drunk with me, I'm sure, but that's neither here nor there. So I remember there was no great big push in A when I came in to get a sponsor. But there was one clown going around, who was trying to recruit young men like me. It was always young men like this person. I told him I didn't want a sponsor. Thank you very much. So I've never had a sponsor, and for some reason or other, I seem to get by, I haven't had a drink. I see sponsorship around AA as a kind of cloning, not cloning, grooming. So anyway. I've got some very good friends in AA, always have. I stay in touch with a lot of my old friends, who I got sober with, and we meet up occasionally. We started the Zoom meeting there at the beginning of lockdown, and not a lot of them used to turn up there. The thing about it was the vast majority have never found God somewhere or along the way, or they found God and disposed of God. So I became involved. I've been a dishwasher. When I came into AA, I was an unemployable dishwasher, so I had this skill. And when people were looking for people in AA to do service, I was the dishwasher, and I did the dishes and cleaned the ashtrays. The principle involved in being of use, it was something I didn't know about. I was just a net taker in every sort of relationship. Everything I got into was a drunk. And this principle of doing the ashtrays or doing the washing up at the AA meeting is the very same as being chair of whatever it is I've been chair of since. It's been of service. And it's been of service. It's benefited me greatly, in whatever sort of level. And the, uh, So I didn't drink at this time. I went to meetings and was involved in meetings and involved. I've been involved in all levels of AA. Like, I've never not gone to AA. Like, I've always enjoyed what AA has got to offer. My friends enjoy meeting up with them every week and whatever else. Like, and they, I was, when I was about 6 months sober, probably, I probably around then I got a big book because I wouldn't have been able to read anything like, you know, like before then. By the time I got to the end of a sentence, like I'd forgotten what was at the beginning, like, and let alone getting to the end of the chapter, and I was wondering what was at the beginning of this chapter. But anyway, I read the big book, and it was a big book. It was kind of, it didn't speak to me. It didn't really speak to me. There was all of these WASPs, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, like, and they were all professionals, like, and I was a low-life scumbag, like, and a unemployable dishwasher, which I'd worked hard to work my way down to. And I'd never actually lost anything, as it were, in my life. I'd never had wives, professions, jobs, houses to lose, like, you know. I started off my drinking career with one foot in the gutter. But when I didn't identify with this lot whose stories were in there, nor did I identify with Bill W. wrote the big book. It's not AA's story at all. It's not the first 100 members. If anybody hasn't read the writing the big book, magnificent book, highly recommended, like William Shager. That tells you all about it. It just confirmed to me like a lot of the stuff I already knew. That was all Bill W's story. Everything is in the big book, like when what AA is. It was wasn't the experience of the 100 first 100 members. Because the first 100 members anyway, half of them went and got pissed again. So. Anyway, but what I did identify, where I did get my identification, I managed to kind of put my own story together, so to speak, was the kind of the oral tradition. Like it was the people in the meetings who identified with all those lovely blood and snotters. Jesus, I loved them. They were great. They were my people. And they so it was very important for me to get a handle on my, if I wasn't one thing or another, my, when looking at my character defects, for instance, it wasn't the things I'd done which I shouldn't have been doing. Like, it was the things I wasn't doing which I should have been doing. It was all about omission, like sins of omission, if you want to call them that. And they, so anyway, I kind of gradually I found my own way in AA. Like, and I did this basically by staying away from a drinker one day at a time, and the effects of not drinking a day at a time are just like the effects of drinking a day at a time, only in reverse. You kind of exponentially get well just by not drinking, like the whole effort of not drinking, like, and then having all these great mates around, like, you know, who we used to have coffee with, and basically we used to tell each other dirty stories, like, and keep away from the people who smoke, and you do a 1, 5, and 8 and speak to your sponsor and all that. We didn't have much time for those. Like, Pat knows a lot of these people, like, and Pat will have been one of them at one time, like, and they the good thing about it is that we're all still around, like, you know, and we didn't drink a day at a time. Sometimes you hear it said in AA, like, what kept me sober yesterday won't keep me sober today. And I think that's bollocks, like, because what kept me sober yesterday is what keeps me sober today, i.e. not drinking a day at a time. And because I'm not drinking, I can tweak my life. If issues arise, like, it is a kind of a, it's a reflective exercise. Like, one can reflect, like the sort of thing one I never did before, like, because I didn't have the ability to reflect because I was always going for a drink. So that's that was one aspect of the whole thing. Like, and because I wasn't drinking, like, I was able to tweak my life and they. And get things better and stop pissing myself and any number of other things. I was able to hold on to jobs a lot longer, but I discovered somewhere along the way I was constitutionally incapable of being an employee, and I kind of started working for myself, like, and so I went to meetings. I did all these things. Didn't drink at the time. I went back. I went. Didn't go back to studying. I started studying, and I became unemployable as a higher degree. Then after all of that, like, you know, I became a right smart arse, like, you know. And but anyway, the thing about it is like that. It's a see as a that great Scottish drunk called R.D. Lang used to say, like, you know, like. experience isn't what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens to you, like, and that is very true, like, because I didn't have to react to things, like, I could work out maybe better ways to go, like, about my life, and they, when, I remember I was working for a friend of mine, like, in still in the building trade, like, and he rang me up one Sunday night, and he sacked me, and they, so I thought, well, fuck me, and not again, like, you know, and so that was the time I decided I'd go out and study. I knew a few people in here who were actually, who'd gone back to studying, like, after they got sober. So anyway, I'm not drinking a day at a time, and I'm going to meetings, and I got around to looking at the steps, and I realized I'd done step one to three, like, you know, like step three is what I did the day at my first meeting. I made a commitment to AA, and step two is what, step one was, I knew about that. The odd thing about it, the big book doesn't say much about not drinking a day at a time. I don't think there's anything at all in there about not drinking a day at a time. And that's what I did, like a drinking, not drinking a day at a time. And that's what saved my life. So I accepted that I was an alcoholic a long time before I came into AA. Like within a year or two of me starting drinking, I knew one drink was too many and a thousand weren't enough. Like, so that's my definition of alcoholism. It'll do me, thank you very much. Couldn't care less about what all of these academics come out with, all these isms and people talk about. I suffer from alcoholism. I don't have any of the other isms, and by not drinking a day at a time, I kind of can recover from alcoholism. Step two, I just made I came to believe that something or other like might be able to kind of sort me out, like, and so that was it really. Like, so I took step two before coming into a on my way to my first meeting, when I decided to go. But when I did step four and step five, which I did. They were back in the 60s, if anybody remembers the 60s. So we used to say far out, man, and too much, man, and all that shit, like, you know. And we used to also add to that sort of know yourself and be free, man. And I never had a clue what it meant. Not a clue, like, until I did these steps four and five. And those words, after stopping drinking, they were the most powerful things that I'd ever done, like, in my life. Knowing I could actually change, I could direct the course of my life, I could stop reacting to things and kind of sail my own canoe, so to speak, like, and work things out, like, which what I wanted to do. And thereafter, really, if people sort of said to me, well, you can't think that, Sean, or you can't do that, Sean, or that doesn't sound too right to me, like, I was able to, I had the confidence to tell them to fuck off. And this is me, like, and if you didn't like that, that's got nothing to do with you, like, you know, whoever my route in life. And that was one of the reasons, that was one of the things that kind of improved my sobriety, being able to do that. Like, but it's being able to be myself with a degree of gusto, like, and then later on, like, when I became unemployable on a higher level, like, you know, when I started working for myself, I became a book dealer. And I was always a big book man, and I love the concept. When I came around first, like, you know, I wasn't a reader or a studier or a student or an academic or anything, like, but I started reading some of these books that were around then. Like, it was kind of Krishnamurti seemed to be big, and I kind of had a look at him and I thought, nah, shite, like, I'll stick with Christy Murphy, far better. And I looked at some other stuff, and there was Marxist theories of alienation, and they were the greatest sort of liberatory things that liberated me far more than any of that sort of spiritual guff, like, you know, like that that was around, that lots of people used to read. And often people who only read one book, like, suggested you should be reading that as well. They suggested all their friends should be reading this one book. Dear God, This Is Anna, I remember that was one of them, like. so anyway, this self-knowledge bit, like, was a very powerful thing to have, like, and as I say, like, I kind of, I was going to talk about Sartre used to write about bad faith, like, it's mauvais foi, as we say in French. There you go, like, I'm showing off now. That's the only French I know. But it was a, being for other, living your life as other people perceive you as to be, like, you know, like he had an example of a waiter sort of behaving, walking like a penguin, like, because that's what they were supposed to be. But anyway, this kind of whole concept, it freed me, like, to be what I am or what I want to do, and to kind of look to my own aspirations, like, so that was very powerful. I would, the step 4 and 5, that's what I was for, as far as I was concerned. Like, I looked at all the other steps, like step 11, it doesn't really apply to me. I don't do prayer or meditation. At our meeting the other week here at my own little home group here, someone did this, or I kind of, someone asked me to do a reading, start the meeting off, and we get about a dozen people at it. And so it was about prayer and meditation. And I sort of said, well, that's all beyond me. I don't do any of that. Like, you know, like, it's not for me. Like, and the, it was funny, like, the way the meeting went. The next person came in and they said they didn't either. And the next person came in and nobody did this prayer and meditation thing. And they all said, how bad. But if the first person had to come in and said, like, oh, I'd be lost without prayer and meditation. It's what keeps me sober, my conscious contact with my heart. They all would have been coming in, like, saying this shows. Gump, like, you know. So anyway, the message here is to be yourself and share your own truth. Like, as there was meetings I used to go to in London where they all used to kind of sit around and hold hands, and I'd do this hokey pokey at the end of the meeting whilst they were saying the Serenity Prayer, and they add all these things, like, they get them all from, it's all Californian, like, you know. Like, I've got far more problems with Californian gump than I have with the sorry there, Jim, with all of this, with Catholicism and religion and AA, like, and they, anyway, I stopped doing this, like, the 3 meetings I used to go to in London, and lo and behold, like, before long, like, I just sit it out, like, you know, and other people then, like, said, I think maybe we should stop doing this. I had a group conscience meeting, and at all the meetings, they stopped doing it, like, you know, they stopped doing it at my meeting when I came to live where I am. They used to do it as well, but after about a year, like, they kind of said, likewise, you know, I think it should stop doing it. So what I'm saying is that secular meeting, Mark? Is it are you still a secular meeting or just a load of fucking loonies? Yeah, you are. No, it's very important, like, to go to meetings and share, like, you know, because other people, when they see that I'm sober, for instance, they realize, like, that it's impossible to get sober without spirituality, without, but I don't do spirituality either, the most meaningless concept in the English dictionary, and they see you as an example of what it is like, and they will follow along, like, and they don't have to follow the other stuff, like, which is all a bit of a mystery to you anyway, because most of it's just nodding heads, like, I think there's no great understanding. And I think it's very important to go along to our meetings and spread the gospel of non-belief in AA. Like, and I'm going to stop there, Jim. I'm going to thank you very much all for listening to me. And it's very nice to see you all. And next week I'll come back and do my... What are you saying there? I've got something, everybody. I don't know what's that saying there, Mark. Something or other, yeah. Good on you. Thanks, Jim.